Elliot, I'm super excited to have you on the show. It's interesting. In my profession, I have the gift, like the benefit of being able to meet so many interesting people. And the people that I find the most fascinating are those that have a history that is varied and diverse, and it brings them into all kinds of different worlds. And you're no exception to that. First of all, you're a coach to top performing poker players. You're a hypnotherapist as well, which is almost like an accidental profession. There's a ton of different things that you have done in your history. I'm super excited to have you on. So this is Elliot Rowe. I'd love to hear more about your background from your words, and of course, excited to have you on Practice Makes Perfect. Thanks very much so much for being on the show.
Junan, thank you so much for having me on. It's a bit of an eclectic background. I was actually sort of prior to my world in coaching and hypnotherapy, I was in property investments and solar energy investments. And my background, I guess early to mid 20s, went and saw a hypnotherapist because I had a horrific fear of flying. And she managed to resolve it in an hour whilst bringing up a repressed memory of me seeing a photo of a small private jet at my granddad's house and being told that his business partner had died in it. So that came up in a hypnotherapy session. It explained why I had this unreasonable fear of flying, and she resolved it and worked through it. And that sent me, you know, on a path where I was just super interested in the subject. So I went and got trained as a hypnotherapist whilst doing, you know, solar energy investment work in the background, and started basically seeing people for fun, trying to help them with their fears, quit smoking, lose weight, get better at golf, things like that. And my business around hypnotherapy just started to grow and grow. And I found it much more fun than being in renewable energy. And because of that, I shifted my direction. I guess this is about 2011 into coaching hypnotherapy, and was fortunate enough to start working with a number of poker players, a number of UFC fighters. And then that expanded to Olympians, lots of Wall Street traders, crypto traders, CEOs of companies, founders of companies. So it sort of spread out like, I don't know, I'm gonna say some virus, I guess, through the high performers. That because I was getting results in one area, people in other areas wanted to try. And it sort of spread through word of mouth through those communities. And I've been fortunate enough to work with a number of very interesting people in a number of very interesting industries.
How did you cross the divide, so to speak? First of all, what's the story of the first real world-class professional that you ever worked with? Maybe we anonymize that if we need to, but like, how does one cross the border? Some people begin as coaches, and they just begin, they're not expensing it to, the client's not expensing it to anyone, they're not doing anything like that. But then this one kind of through client, it sounds like that for you was in the poker world, and it related to performance, because it seems like hypnotherapy and performance are like pretty intimately connected in your profession. Is that right? What is the story of what happened there?
So, I mean, in the work that I do, I'm a performance and mindset coach who one of the modalities I use is hypnotherapy. So, and I'm using that to help people resolve the roadblocks that are holding them back. So self-sabotage, anxiety, improve their performance and such. So I guess that's the first section there. And then looking back over those years, I was quite fortunate. I actually used the power of the internet. It was forums that everything came from. So
interesting.
And it sort of moved up at the same time. So I was working with a number of poker players and building my reputation in the poker market. And I also, I was on some like MMA forums back years and years ago. And I put out a post saying, you know, I'm a hypnotherapist. Does anyone who's in the UFC want mindset coaching? And I got some UFC fighters reach out through literally a random forum. I worked with some UFC fighters from that. And then I had a background in MMA from a long time ago. So I had some, and then I walked into the UFC gyms. We were living in Las Vegas at the time. And I said, I'll give free talks. And I gave free talks and I picked up some more UFC clients. So I had this sort of dual sides of the business growing, where I was getting sort of poker players at a higher and higher level, And I was getting pretty substantial success quite quickly. In poker, I mean, it's been over 150 million my clients have won now. They've won everything. And that success started relatively early, that I was getting outsized success with my clients. And then they were sort of excited because I also worked with poker players and the poker players and the with the UFC fighters, sorry. And the UFC fighters thought it was quite cool that I was working with poker players. They had like this synergy of like everyone thinking the other thing was cool. And then with professional poker, the reality of it is the people playing at the highest stakes, they're sitting at the table with businessmen in bit different industries, and they're sitting at the table with professional athletes. So if you go to the highest stakes tables in Vegas, there are a lot of interesting people who are sitting if they're playing with $20,000, $50,000 in front of them. And, you know, I started getting spoken about, not just for poker players, but the poker players would be saying, hey, you work on Wall Street. I've got this mindset guy. He's changed the way I deal with stress at the poker table. You should see if he can help your firm. And then it sort of started to spread because, you know, or another athlete from another sport. It was like, Elliot's helping me in the UFC. Perhaps, you know, he'll help your skating career or your basketball or your soccer or your whatever. And it sort of all started to spread just from, you know, not needing to be an expert in a specific industry or sport, but my expertise is helping people overcome self-sabotage, which is really applicable to any human. And it's just ended up in sports and business is sort of where they care about it the most.
Self-sabotage is like, that's the moment when you are, where the stakes are the highest. So it sounds like for a lot of these people, I mean, careers are years in the building, but then there's this one moment, or there's a few of them in a career ideally that really matter. And it's the sense that I'm getting is that, and I know it's my experience sometimes as well, is that in those high stakes moments, people tend to break apart. And no wonder, we're human beings. We're doing our best as like pretty vulnerable people or whatever, trying to hide the vulnerability as much as possible and be that world-class person, which we believe that we can be and hopefully other people believe. But it's not simple. And it sounds to me as if your first story, bringing back to the story about how you encountered hypnotherapy in the first place, is that it even connects with the unconscious in a way. And I mean, it's very deep, all this stuff. I'd love to see what really happens during those moments. What do you believe is really going on?
So the way that I view this, and you know, I believe all of it's an art more than a science, is the state of hypnosis. It's not like stage hypnosis. There's no magic. You get into a meditative or trance state, a bit like you're doing a deep meditation. When you get into that state, instead of looking to clear your thoughts, like you're doing traditional mindfulness meditation. So you wait for a thought to come in, you bring yourself back to your breath. Thought comes in, bring yourself. That's traditional mindfulness meditation. With hypnotherapy, you're looking to focus in on the emotion with as much attention as possible. So let's say in my case, there was a fear of flying. The lady was saying, so what does that feel like when you sit on a plane? Okay, so I feel a tightness in my chest. My heart is racing, etc. Okay, when else have you felt this way? And it starts bringing up these memories because you're connected to your subconscious in that state. And you get a list of these memories. So in my case, it was like, I remember a time when there was terrible turbulence on the plane and I felt that way. I remember a time when I was waiting to get on a plane and I felt really stressed. And then I remember a time at my granddad's house and I'm seeing this picture and I've been told his business partner has died. Okay, so that's the initial sensitizing event. Then from that spot, we look at it from a third party perspective. So she says, I want you to look at this through your adult eyes. How does it look as you see this child being shown this? How's the child feeling? And you effectively interject logic in the memory from an adult perspective rather than a child's perspective. And by doing that, you adjust the memory, which adjusts the triggers that are firing. So that's my very specific fear of flying sort of version with this. But the same thing works with, let's say, anxiety or self-worth or beliefs around how much money you deserve to make. So wealth, a lot of the time, people who keep sabotaging their financial situation will start bringing up memories of their dad at the dinner table saying rich people are bad, you can't trust the wealthy, et cetera, et cetera. So if you, as a child, believe that having money is a bad thing and your family won't love you, your subconscious will create a lot of barriers stopping you from being successful. And this is where you see people who have these repeated businesses where they reach a level of success, they implode, they start another business, reach a level of success, they implode, because they're hitting the line that they think is too much. And then they take themselves back to zero. Again, it's the same with anxiety. Procrastination is often an ego protection issue that's been learned. So if you don't try, you can't fail. You know, so a lot of people with procrastination issues, when we bring up these memories, they'll talk about being the clever kid at school, not studying for exams, because if they study and fail and they don't get the A, it's a lot worse than not studying, getting a B, because they could always tell themselves they would have got an A if they'd tried. So it's it's an ego protection mechanism. So you see these different programs playing out through people's lives. And by adjusting the memories, sort of the early stage memories through hypnotherapy, we can adjust how those programs then play out. And that has very significant impacts on people's success, because typically there's just a few of these programs that are holding you back. And if we undo those programs, you know, they're uncapped effectively. And that's the sort of work I do. So it's like a therapy. It's digging into this usually childhood stuff between ages of 3 and about 10 years old. That's typically where we end up. Yeah.
Does everyone have a sensitizing event like this? I mean, everyone has, I imagine everyone has some kind of like what's equivalent to them of trauma, whether that's,
So there are different levels of subtlety with it. So, you know, there are people with PTSD and, you know, there are horrific traumas that have happened. There are other people I've worked with where a kid's stolen their lunch when they're 5. And that's their trauma. It doesn't have to be something horrific. It just has to be how the child learned to interpret their place in the world and how they then designed a program to keep them safe. So they stand up in class and they say something and they get the question wrong. The teacher mocks them or the other kids mock them. They then, their subconscious learns to be safe, I stay quiet. And they wonder why they have, you know, anxiety issues, social anxiety issues as an adult. And it's that they've learned that it's scary to be outgoing. It's dangerous to be outgoing. So it's just this case of these different programs that have been created and our subconscious believes it's just keeping us safe. Like it's like it's created a program to help you. Unfortunately, you know, it's an evolutionary program that was really useful, you know, to create fears when we're in the jungle 20,000, 50,000 years ago, because, you know, you see a tiger, your mom screams, you become scared of tigers. Unfortunately, you know, in the modern world, these things aren't quite as dangerous as that, but we're still, our subconscious hasn't evolved in the same way and we'll still create the same responses. That's why, you know, many people will feel, you know, public speaking makes them feel horrifically uncomfortable. You know, they'll dodge asking out the girl they want to ask out because they have this fear of rejection, because being rejected in a village community is very dangerous, because you might not ever, there might be 3 women.
So, you know, there are consequences.
Exactly. Whereas in the modern world, the consequences aren't the same, but our subconscious is still, you know, programmed in the way that it was. So that's really the philosophy behind it. And that, you know, that's what I've seen in terms of results, is when I can have someone who has a repeating pattern start to understand and work through where that repeating pattern came from, they can step outside of the pattern and have a new way of moving themselves forward in life.
Do people that come to you with a meaningful amount of success ever become afraid that they're trauma or their stuff, that their baggage, so to speak, is what made them successful? It is so interesting as you encounter these people. Sometimes they're like, I can't meditate or some other version of this, because if I do, I'll become too chill and I will become a failure or something like that.
Yeah. So yes, definitely. That's one of the concerns I talk through with people, but they're typically coming to me because they've reached a sticking point and they know they can't get further. So yes, their negative self-voice has driven them to a certain level, but to reach the next stage, there needs to be an evolution in the way they treat themselves for them to be able to take it to that next level. And if they're coming to me, they're not genuinely happy with where they are.
Right. Yeah. So, they're not actually there.
Yeah. So they're clearly, if you're seeking out a performance coach, you think there's a problem with your performance. Mm-hmm. Otherwise you wouldn't be seeking
sure.
out.
Yeah.
And then, as I say, they'll say, hey, but I want this negative voice. It drives me. And, you know, my logic will be, hey, it's driven you to this level, but you've been stuck for the last 3 years. Clearly something has to change. And most people who work with me, they're highly intelligent people and they're looking to get better. They're looking to improve.
Right.
So, you know, once they can start being like, okay, well, I'm repeating this behavior, it's no longer serving me. They're quite happy to then start working on improving that. It's, again, I'm lucky with the client base because, you know, typically people are very successful already when they reach out to me now.
Well, you also, if you are world-class at something, UFC being an example, and it's interesting, I'm just going to point out, this is an audio podcast, but there's an amazing dichotomy, Elliot, in the way that you look online and the way that you come off on a radio show. And so the way that you come off is you come off so thoughtful and pensive, and your voice obviously is calming and I don't know, maybe a way that you do deliberately or not. And then you look like an assassin from a James Bond film. And so it's really fascinating because people will look you up, which is ElliotRowe.com, by the way. And they'll be like, holy shit, he's a killing machine, you know? And now when you tell the story about MMA and how MMA is sort of the bridge between hypnotherapy to the performance side, then now it makes sense to me. I can see how the personalities have merged. It seems as if this is actually a super fascinating thing because UFC fighters, poker players, I suspect many of them, chess players, all kinds, have had mentors. And mentorship is a form of subservience, kind of the self, where you're saying, well, okay, I'm smart and I think I know better, but obviously this other person is much better than me. But it also correlates with intelligence. And I bet there's a lot of people, I would probably include myself in this, that would have some skepticism with regards to hypnotherapy in the first place, because here's the way that it can come off. I do hypnotherapy, a big cloud of magic happens, and then I'm cured on the other side. And we're not really sure what the big cloud of magic is, but we associate it with seances and so on, right? In some people's minds. And so, but it seems there is a clear process and there must be some very, like there's systems to it. And so do you ever have to confront that? And I guess at this point, you're probably past it.
Every client I have is skeptical. So that's the starting point. You know, my starting point is anyone who comes to me, especially, you know, they're from the business world or they're from, you know, Wall Street trading or they're a professional poker player. Typically, they're very high IQ. They're very skeptical. But it's because the media notion of hypnotherapy is that it is something magic. Like you say, a magic cloud.
Right.
It's the guy on stage snapping his fingers. When I describe it in the way that I have, that really this is a natural state that you can create, which you have probably felt in meditation, because nearly everyone I've worked with has meditated. So they know the feeling of meditation. And that's the working state where we start to find the memories that have created the program that you're running. And most people can connect with the idea that they have learned their flaws, their failures. They can understand that something must have made them act in the way that they're acting, that these aren't humans. And once it's broken down as to what it truly is, rather than what the media perception is, these clients are, you know, they're intelligent enough to be able to work through it. And also, Like I say, in poker, I've been very fortunate. It's over 150 million of winnings, UFC champions, world champions in other sports, loads of business people turning their businesses around. There's so many credible people saying that it's worth talking to me that a lot of people will at least then take a flyer and say, hey, well, I'm still skeptical, but I'm willing to give it a try.
Right.
And then typically after one session, it just makes sense because they'll start to bring up these memories. It will all make logical sense as to why it would have created the program. And from there, they're happy. Usually after a first session, they say, oh, now it makes sense to me. I see what we're doing.
And you're doing all this. I mean, right now, by definition, if you're doing it on Zoom, unless you're just doing podcasts.
So I do everything on Zoom. And so there's a few reasons for that. One, if you came to my office, your eyes would be closed because it's an eyes closed process. So the difference between doing hypnotherapy with headphones on or in my office, is virtually the same for the client.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, I'm in Salt Lake City. It not full of, the highest number of high performers in the world. Wouldn't be able to run my kind of business from any geographical location realistically. I'm working with people in different countries, different time zones, typically the top performers in their industry. Yeah, the internet and Zoom allows that, gives us access to the entire world rather than just a small
amazing source of people
who lives in the local town.
It's kind of like it's a crazy world right now for coaches and for people that are in your profession, because they really, the world is completely open to you now. Maybe before, someone might have thought, oh, I'll need to meet Elliot in person. I'm really interested, but actually I feel that I need to see him in Salt Lake City or something, but that's clearly not the case anymore. So now your customer base and everyone else's is really widely opened up. Okay, so there's poker players, there's traders, there's business people, there's UFC fighters. What are the things before they come to you that you see in common? Are those things that are learnable, or do they tend to just happen as a result of this programming that you kind of talk about?
Do you mean in terms of their issues or the way the commonalities,
just their qualities, like if there's every self-help book is out there teaching you that you can do it yourself. You're talking to almost exclusively these people in your practice. So what are you seeing that are correlations between all these people that are learnable?
Well, virtually no one is doing things by themselves.
Throughout
my entire, everyone that I work with, we're talking if someone's top 10 in the world, they have world-class coaches in anything that they do. So there's no one who's learning to be a UFC fighter in their garage on their own. There aren't really even poker players who are learning poker on their own. They're all in these strong networks of world-class players who are then working together to understand the game in a different way. Even the same with, really world-class traders as well. They have a network of other world-class traders that they're discussing, the technical analysis with.
Sure.
So network is key. Being coachable is really important in that process as well. And one of the themes I've seen with the most successful people is definitely a growth mindset of, oh, this didn't work out. What can I learn? How can I move forward? When people have a very fixed mindset, it's hard for them to reach the very highest levels of anything because when they hit their first failure, they get stuck and they don't learn from that. They feel like a failure instead. So that's definitely another huge linchpin. But when it comes to the work of self-development, I truly believe, and obviously I'm biased because I'm a coach, but to really do the deep work, you need to be working with somebody else, because what you're looking to do is dig up your blind spots. And the fact that they're blind spots means you can't really do that work alone. So it doesn't need to be me working with you, but you need a third party to help point out your blind spots. And the way I would describe this is, if you've ever had a friend come to you for advice, it is very easy to point out what your friend needs to do. You can see it, even if they're blind to it. And we're the same. Everyone's the same. I have a coach that I speak to every 2 weeks. And I'm a world-class coach. And I seek out someone else to get that third party. Hey, I just want to check, what am I missing here? Because we hide the things from ourselves that we don't want to see.
Yeah.
So, and this is why these self-help books that, do it alone,
Yeah.
I don't really think that's viable, because you're going to hide the most important things, because they're the ones that are going to hurt the ego the most or are going to be the scariest to work through. So you'll find yourself just ignoring it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. By definition, it seems that we're saying everyone has a blind spot. It's actually fascinating to talk to you, and there's so much to dig into. And I can feel myself as I'm talking to you going, man, this applies to me. You know, here's these situations where I feel that I could be doing better, but I don't really confront, like, everybody kind of has these things. And I think you and I, like, you know, we can look at ourselves in the mirror and say, like, we're doing pretty all right, but there's always something. I wonder if you've ever encountered, though, the opposite, someone who said, you know, oh, I've reached this level, and they've had some introspection and they realize, actually, you know what, this is good enough for me and I'm satisfied.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, just a couple of parts of the question. The first is, I think that it's a forever fine tuning. So typically I'm working with clients early, there might be really big things coming up where there's huge self-sabotages and then they overcome those, but then there's always something to refine. And as I say, that's why I'm still seeing a coach every 2 weeks. I've been doing it for 8 years. It's continual work to try and refine. And especially when people are trying to reach the very top of their industry, ironically, the difference between the people at the top is very, very small. And they're just looking for the 0.1% improvement over their competition.
Because
so when you reach that top, that's where the biggest rewards are. So a 0.1% improvement or 1% improvement might actually be tens of millions of dollars.
Especially in poker, right? Or especially between first and second place. But
first and second place, poker, winning or losing a fight. And then in business, you know, if your CEO is 5%, you know, after a year of work on themselves is 5% more effective, what does that mean if a CEO is a 5% more effective CEO? And when you're talking about multinational companies, that can be incredibly substantial in terms of the value that brings a company. But then you're mentioning, do people reach this stage where they've done enough and they feel that they want to stop? That's certainly the case, and definitely financially. So there are people who reach a level where they say, I don't need more money. And I do see this shift where I'll work with someone, hey, I want to be UFC champion, or I want to be win, you know, whatever, get a world record or become a multimillionaire, et cetera, et cetera. And there's definitely some with a number of people, a belief that when they hit that, it's game over, they've won.
That's it.
And when they do hit that, it's never game over. They realize that didn't actually solve all of their problems. Then they become more introspective as to, you know, how can I provide value to the world? How can I live a happier life? And I do definitely see this shift with people when they reach really significant financial security. It's definitely not the end of the journey. It doesn't solve all of the problems. And then they typically move on to this shift of, like, looking for life's meaning, looking for happiness, working on their relationships more. And that's definitely a theme that I've seen through a decent number of clients as they've reached what would at one's case be considered, you know, the highest level of success in their industry.
Yeah, like a different type of performance. I got to perform. I have to have the best friend.
Hey, it's never a bad thing to have the best friends.
Yeah, fair enough. So I'm wondering, because you're watching these people, you watch them on television, some of these, right? Like some of your not in your entire client base, but a portion of your client base, they're publicly acknowledged that you have a relationship with them, and you can look them up online. And there's tens of millions of dollars of winnings, among other things. I'm wondering if you've ever watched one of your clients on television and, like, seen that moment where they typically would have, let's say, lost their nerve or something. Because I imagine that these things have physical manifestations. Do you ever watch somebody go, and then veer in the right direction instead of the wrong one?
Yeah, I mean, definitely in poker. So, I don't know how much the listener base has ever played poker, but effectively, poker's a game of skill and luck. So it's a combination of the two. So you have to be highly skilled. It's one of the few sports or games you can play where you can make the perfect move and lose.
Right.
So that makes it psychologically very difficult. That's why it's so in chess, if you play better than your opponent, you win. In poker, you should win. And
yes, the odds are.
Yeah, the odds are you win, but it doesn't necessarily mean you do. So one of the things we'll work very hard on is this sort of getting very deep in a tournament, perhaps three players left, your chip leader, and you have a horrific bad beat. So you get your money in good. It's your aces versus their kings. 80% chance of winning. You lose and you lose 80% of your chips, 50% of your chips. How do you then respond?
Right.
From that situation. And, you know, I play through this scenario with clients and I've watched it play out number of times with in very significant tournaments, you know, with multiple millions of dollars for first. And the difference between first and second might be, you know, 5 million for first, 3 million for second, 2 million for third, something like that.
Right. So
very substantial changes. And I've definitely watched them maintain control in a way you wouldn't expect a human to maintain control when every, you know, it is an unbelievably unfortunate situation for them. And it's really this being able to recalibrate and then say, okay, this is my new reality. What's the best thing I can do in this present moment with the new data that I have? And the data is you lost the hand. You now have this many chips instead of that many chips. It's not relevant what happened before. And then the same thing, you know, when I've been working with fighters, you know, we will work on not just, hey, visualize yourself walking in and knocking the person out. What do we do if you're on the bottom and you're dealing with a highly stressed and you're dealing with a bit of an injury? How do you deal with this situation? How do you remain calm? How do you work yourself through the different positions on the ground so that you're no longer in a position and then recover? So a lot of it's about being able to deal with the worst case scenario and having the different game plans in place. So when it happens, they're like, oh, I know what to do, rather than they hit panic. And it's when you panic in any of these situations that your performance will drop to a level where it shouldn't drop to.
When you're telling me, and I mean, this is, I gotta say, this is world-class material from the perspective of it's great to hear these stories and to feel like a few things, but to feel that all of these people at this level have this kind of same weakness that regular people have, and that they have the ability, and everyone kind of to a degree, they don't have the resources, but they have the ability, the opportunity to overcome it. But how do you simulate the pressure of the moment? As I said, I'm imagining there's a few moments that I have in my mind. And I could never have imagined that they would happen, first of all. And second, I don't know if I could ever duplicate that environment. So, you know, is it the magic cloud of hypnotherapy? Like, what is happening there?
Well, so one thing is, with, let's say, professional sports or poker, we're in a very guarded environment. We have a very good idea of the different things that can happen. So, you know, we can prepare for a bad beat in poker. It's going to happen substantially. It's going to happen a lot. We know that this is going to happen. We can prepare for the fact that if you reach the final table, it's going to be televised, and some people have an issue with it being televised. So, you know, there are certain things that we know are going to come up. In a fight, we know you're going to get hit. You know, we're not preparing for, you know, the bomb going off in the crowd. You know, there are things that can happen that we're certainly not covering. But when it comes to creating that pressure, your mind can't tell the difference between a very strong visualization and reality, and create those emotions. So if you think about, you know, being crass, you know, this is why books like 50 Shades of Grey sell. You know, you're looking at ink on a piece of paper, and then you're having a physical response to it. You know, it's turning people on. It's not real. It's just ink on paper, and your brain is transcribing that into something that will then, you know, turn you on, make you feel however you're going to feel. It's the same with anything else. So, you know, there's been research where people have imagined lifting weights and gained strength from imagining lifting weights, because the body is then responding to the mental stimulation of this. And what we're doing is getting the client into a very sort of very focused state through this meditation practice, and then having them visualize what's happening. And then those emotions, those same emotions will come up. So someone has a really big fear of giving a speech. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, people, I'm sure listening to this, people recognize that. If you close your eyes and you visualize standing in front of a crowd of 1,000 people and giving a talk, and then you've forgotten your notes, a lot of people will be able to create the feeling of anxiety that they would feel in that moment, even though it's just visualized, it's just created. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So even though, or asking out the woman who you really want to ask her out, but you haven't been able to yet, picturing mm-hmm. asking her out a lot of the time will increase heart rate.
Sure.
You're just visualizing it. So that's how you recreate those high pressure moments, is because your mind, your subconscious knows how it's going to react in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, because it's just a repeating program. It's not random. It knows that you standing up in front of 1,000 people and forgetting your notes will make you feel a certain way.
And now the UFC fighter becomes a professional poker player, let's say.
Right.
Or the, you know, I don't know, the billionaire becomes an astronaut, which is apparently increasingly common for right. whatever. Right. So now you have someone who has had some of this training in one sphere.
Hmm.
Is it then applicable to the other sphere, which is, I guess, the inverse of the question would be, if you're, is there anyone that you can't train or to which your stuff is not applicable?
I believe that everything is everything. So I believe we're just bringing our issues to whatever industry we go to. So mm-hmm. if whether you've decided to be a Wall Street trader, a poker player, a fighter, a business person, the feeling that you have, you brought to that, it didn't create it.
Mm-hmm.
So the confrontations in a business call are no different to a confrontation, you know, with your boss, different confrontation with your wife, with whoever.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. if we work on a client's issues with confrontation, it will resolve their issues with confrontation. It's not industry specific. You know, dealing with high pressure situations, it's not the high pressure situation of a fight or a gambling situation. It's just high pressure situations we're working on.
Okay, so it sounds like the center of what you're saying is you have to work on your mind, and the mind is the center of the experience, or your emotion, or is the mind, is the center of the experience. So how do you do that? You yourself, like, you're going to get off of this and you're going to go, and presumably there's some form of practice or training that you do. What is it?
Oh, so you mean sort of day to day, or?
Yeah, like yours. Like,
oh, so
you,
for me, how I work on myself. Like I say,
yeah.
I see another hypnotherapist every 2 weeks. I do that consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So I practice what I speak in preach in terms of speaking to another coach.
Mm-hmm.
I then also, you know, I meditate. Not a ton. I do about 10 minutes a day. I wake up. We're fortunate. I have a sauna here. I go and have mm-hmm. a sauna and I meditate for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I work out a lot. I believe that exercise is also a form of working on your mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people miss the sort of the psychological impact of working out, like the benefit that can give you. So
right.
So they're the different things that I do. And then I have an app, and I use that as well. You know, it's got like audios that you listen to.
And so auto-hypnosis works in this way, this weird way where you recorded yourself on
yes.
your app and then use it on yourself or something.
Yep. So with mm-hmm. the app, the difference is that's suggestion hypnotherapy. So that's my voice, me telling the person to visualize different situations and
mm-hmm.
they see themselves as a confident person or
right.
allow themselves to get to sleep quickly or work through, you know, feel happier in the moment, whatever it might be. Now, with suggestion hypnotherapy, we're not expecting that to cure the root cause of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
We're using that much more like a warm-up before an event. So like
right.
I have a public speaking audio on there. You would listen to it before you give a public speech and you should feel better for that speech.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have another speech 2 weeks later, you'll need to listen to it again
mm-hmm.
because you haven't worked through the programs that have created it. You've just pepped yourself up. You've got yourself mentally
right.
prepared.
Mm-hmm.
The regression hypnotherapy that I do in one-to-one sessions is where we work through the issues. And that's what I'm not able to do on myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't see my blind spots.
Right.
So the deeper mm-hmm. work has to be worked with someone else because you're just not going to be able to see that yourself.
Amazing. Elliot, I'm so grateful to have had you on. My notes are full of material that I have not had the opportunity to ask you yet. Maybe at some time in the future I will. But it's been a tremendous pleasure to be able to talk to you and get insight into the mind of the person who is making a ton of the world-class work in this world happen. Thank you very much for being on.
I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Take care.